Tony, when we are talking about dairy, and quite a few of our Farming Circuits members are really appreciating that what they see on these dairy DVDs actually applies to them on their other farms, which is cattle, sheep, and grazing. Now, you mentioned that you're moving interstate. Are you covering any farmers that are, you know, on more broad acre, like do have got cropping and have rather than the intensive type of farmers?
Well, with the on-farm composting, we've got some inquiry to work with farmers outside of dairying, but they're a little bit limited on their ability to source raw materials. And so the emphasis, I think, on most of those broadacre guys who are usually large acreage, don't have a lot of raw materials, is to move towards compost teas and try and do most of their work with teas. Maybe make compost to renovate a paddock rather than try and cover the whole property because they don't have access to enough raw materials. So I think that's where the a similar job, and Elaine's probably better qualified to talk about this than me, but I think a similar job can be achieved using compost teas, which are cost effective and can be applied over a larger area. And using, you know, you can make a small amount of compost and expand it out with a tea and cover a large area, and although you've only made a relatively small amount of compost. So I think that's where the opportunity lies with some of the larger cropping farmers. And we are doing some work with some local cropping farmers who have got friends and cousins and relations in the dairy job nearby. And we are looking at working with some with green waste from city councils and towns, etc. But I don't think it's something that can be replicated across the whole country. But I definitely believe compost teas can be across the whole country. So from my point of view, it's getting this acceptance that compost is a valid input to a farming system. And we still like to see farmers use compost teas to complement the fact that they've used compost. And if we can get that as an accepted form of fertilising and managing a dairy farm, then there's no reason why that can't be replicated into other areas. And I think that that's the message that we have to get. And also the message that it's not something that tree huggers do. This is an accepted form of farming practice that can be used in mainstream farming, and that's always been our message. We haven't actually even gone and got our compost or tea certified organic. We haven't gone there at all because we see that this must stack up, and it does stack up against any conventional system out there. So the organic farmers haven't even been part of our marketing strategy to target those farmers. We target any farmer that is trying to make a living.
And if they want to go organic, then they can. But
absolutely,
they don't have to. Yeah. So it really is up to the farmer to make that choice, whether he wants to, you know, get the price increase when he goes organic, or whether he's saving enough money just by going biological that it doesn't really matter if it's organic.
That's right. And what we're finding is that some of these farms have been going for a couple of years, is that they're only one step away from going organic. They're almost there anyway. So what we've done is we've positioned them and put them in a position where they're actually, the next leap is not a leap of faith anymore. It's probably a natural progression for them.
Elaine,
when you really look at this working, we don't lose productivity in the first year or two or three. You know, there's no loss of viability of the farm. And if anything, you're going to be, you know, exactly the same productivity or better. So whether we're talking about milk or we're talking about crops. So we've worked with a number of USDA people, United States Department of Agriculture, in the U.S., and many of these people are starting to, you know, publish and show that exactly what we've been talking about for these many years is actually the case. It just takes a lot of time to do the replicated science properly. And the really critical point is always to say it has to be aerobic compost. If you're not monitoring and you're not making certain that you're maintaining the biology, the aerobic beneficial organisms in your compost, you're not going to be successful doing this. So it's a really critical thing to you know, have Tony's help or Soil Food Web's help in making certain that the compost is really compost and not putrefied organic matter.
I'd actually like to promote one of the Farming Secrets tapes. It's a Walk the Talk tape that I watched last night, Hugo, that was of the day when Elaine spent with us talking to four farmers.
Yeah.
I had a look at it last night. I've just got back from holidays and watched it last night, and it's a really good tape. It's basically Elaine talking to these four different farmers on their property and the interaction between Elaine and the farmers' experience, and Elaine explaining things. It's a fantastic tape. I want to catch up with you and get a heap of the tapes to hand out because it's got some really good information. It's got Elaine sort of talking about the expertise behind it. It's got the farmers talking about what's happened on their farm for the last 3 years. And they're for commercial farmers. They're not organic. They're actually commercial farmers. And this is the system they're using now, and they will continue using. It's a really good tape. And thanks, Elaine, for putting the time in to make yourself available that day. I hope you get a copy of it and have a look at it. Yeah.
I hate watching myself. I guess I just can't deal with it. Because you know how you are when you're watching your own performance. It's like, oh, I shouldn't have done. Ooh, how could I? Ooh, I looked really fat in that shot. You just can't help it. So I have a really hard time watching myself. And, of course, it never would have been made without Hugo and Helen, Farming Secrets.
Absolutely.
Doing the filming. I can come out to people's farm and talk. I can spend months talking about what's going on, but to have Hugo and Helen, Farming Secrets, recording these things so people can, you know, have copies and listen to it over and over and over again. I've had people get these tapes from Farming Secrets, and they'll tell me, you know, they've listened to me 50 times. And
oh, really?
Every time, I know, I'm like, well, I can watch myself 50 times. Whoa. But they say every time they listen to it, they pick up something new. There's such a depth of information there. They're, oh, yeah, okay, now I see. Got that. You know, next time it's something different, a little bit more of the picture puzzle gets filled in for them.
It is, and I did the same thing last night, and I picked up a few pointers that I had forgotten about. So it's good because it's not a mixed message. It's not diluted down. It's the same message that you said, you know, 4 months ago when you did it. It hasn't been lost by being repeated by someone else and someone else and someone else. And that's the beauty of a tape, is that it's the same message. It doesn't get it's not the Chinese whisper.
I experience a lot of that where people will come back to me and they'll say something like, did you so and so said that you said? And I go, whoa, where did they get that? Because I would never ever say that.
Yeah.
So it's really good for people to go back to, you know, the horse's mouth, if you will. Get the tapes, listen to what was actually said and the reason why something is said.
Absolutely.
I'm going to open the, excuse me, both of you, I'm going to open the line, and there is if John isn't on the line, I shall ask a question on behalf of John, because he's a farmer from Junee. And his problem is that he's going organic. He's been basically the modern way of farming, which is chemical fallowing, or, you know, killing the weeds during the summer months so they don't grow. And now he's going organic. He's 1 year in organics, and he has quite a bit of trouble with wild radish. I don't know if you know wild radish, Elaine, but do you know what we call wild radish here? It grows in the winter, especially in winter, and it responds to moisture, and it can contaminate crops if there's if it's not controlled.
We have the same problem here in the United States.
John, if you're online, just press *7, and any other guests, just press *7 and start talking. So if you're on the line, John, well and good. Just press *7 and come on the line. And other guests, if you want to press *7 and come on the line, just do that, and, you know, we'll accommodate you. In the meantime, Elaine, while we're waiting for people to come online, sometimes people are a little bit shy, but we can see there's quite a few online. When it comes to broadacre farming, this is the farmers. We're talking about thousands of acres. Some farmers got 4,000, 10,000 acres. And they have, in the past, they've been practicing pretty close to bare earth farming. It's stubble, bare soil. And they've going using chemicals to get rid of any weed that grows during the summer months, might spray once or twice in the summer months, maybe even more. So how would those sort of farmers move to be organic and try to get rid of their weeds, succession weeds that you mentioned before, the low succession plants?
When we look at organic, historically, because not the biology in the soil hasn't been fully understood even by organic folks. They put in a lot of compost, but a lot of times that compost hasn't actually been made quite right. It's been gone anaerobic and can kind of put you backwards, not all the way to ground zero like we do in conventional, where we're really pretty much nuking everything with the chemicals, the fertilizers, the pesticides, and the tillage that is done. But in organic systems, we can still have problems with weeds if you don't get the biology right. And what you have to understand is Mother Nature and very early successional systems, which, of course, is where weeds are going to do remarkably well. That is the system that Mother Nature has set up to grow weeds, and it's the first step in starting to get plant life coming in and covering the soil's surface and improving the soil and started moving into that later successional system. So how do we, when we've got to go in and we need to till the soil in order to prepare the seed bed, how do we get ourselves off that extremely bacterial dominated, almost no beneficial fungi, very few protozoa? Those organisms were destroyed because of the tillage, perhaps the chemicals, the fertilizers. How do we get those back into the soil? And that's where the compost that Tony and I have been talking about is really critical. If you've got broadacre land and you can't be making 3 tons or a ton or 2 tons of compost to put out per acre, plus spreading that gets to be a nightmare when you start looking at a 1,000 acres or 5,000 acres, 1,000 hectares or more, gets to be a nightmare to spread that. So that's where we go into the compost extracts or the compost teas, and you don't have to be making that much compost then. We could probably get away with a small windrow for, a 10,000 hectare property. We could probably just do one single windrow late in the growing season, maybe early in the springtime, and then when you're really, really busy through most of the summer, you're not doing much with the compost. You're just storing starting materials, so you'll have those starting materials to make the compost in the fall or come springtime. And that's probably, the way to get started, shifting away from having these weedy species, especially wild radish, because that is a plant that requires almost completely bacterial-dominated soil. Once you start getting any decent level of fungi back into the soil, the radish just disappears because it is no longer the right set of chemicals, nutrients, in the soil to support the growth of the wild radish. We're going to be supporting the growth of the crop plant that you do want to have. So there might be a little bit of need to understand what does my crop require, and then making sure that you actually achieve that in your soil so you don't get any weed production.
Elaine, we're going now into summer. Summer's in the next day or so. And then what farmers, broadacre farm, we'll call it, these farmers, we're talking about huge acreages. They can't even make enough compost tea just because the turnaround of the equipment has to, the timing to get the compost tea out or to direct inject it, they have to go for an extract because of their huge acreages. Now, that's
yeah, especially when you're going onto soil, then extract is the way to go. And why not put it out with the seed as you're planting? You know, there's a lot of the current equipment that we have allows you to spray right in front of dropping the seed down out of the planting rig that you've got. So either that or soak your seed in a good compost extract or a compost tea. So it takes very little compost to make that tea or extract to soak your seed in. So, you know, you could end up with having to only use maybe 50, well, probably like 150 or 200 kilograms of compost, and that would make a tea or extract that would cover all of your seed, even on large acreages.
Now, Elaine, what steps can farmers take from the start of summer, which is next day or so, in order to prepare their soil for a more biological approach by the time it comes to harvesting, which is, you know, some 6 months, 5-6 months away? Planting, which is 5-6 months away.
So they want to start applying
at the moment they are harvesting, so they'll end up with stubble, standing stubble and a bit of debris on the ground and quite often bare soil. And what steps could they take from now on after grain has been stripped to take a biological approach?
What they might want to do, especially where they've got bare ground, they might want to actually put a mixture of very low-growing, fairly succulent plants that are going to protect that soil surface from evaporation. There's been quite a bit of work going on at Washington State University now here in the U.S. showing that actually if you get the right kinds of plants growing on your soil's surface, you will actually retain more water than if you leave something bare and fallow. Dark brown surface is going to evaporate a lot more water than green, leafy, succulent. Waxy leaved is what you really mean by succulent. So that very little water is lost from that system. And because the biology is maintained by the exudates coming out of those root systems, you're going to be building that biology all summer long through very dry periods. And all of a sudden you discover that you have a lot more water than you thought. And it's dispersed throughout the soil profile and not just concentrated at the top, where it hits a compaction zone because you don't have the life to rebuild structure in that soil if you don't have biology. As long as the biology is there and working, you'll build structure. The aggregates will hold the water. You'll get water deeper down in the profile. And then when you do plant come next fall, at the end of the hot summer period, your plants will put their roots down deep. They'll get more minerals. They'll get more nutrients, and they will have the water in the soil, so you don't have to irrigate.
So, Elaine, what I'm hearing you say is you really want plants to be growing, and we do get our summer dumps of rain here. It's quite unreliable in most cropping areas. So what I'm hearing you say, it's trying to get or encouraging some species of plants that will grow in the summer months.
Mm-hmm. Or they can grow right now at this early springtime period, get the soil surface covered. And the thing is, you don't want to put out just one species of these very low-growing, and I'm talking plants that don't grow more than maybe 3-4 centimeters, or maybe 6 centimeters tall, no taller than that. You want to choose something that's not going to vine. When you do put your crop plant in, you don't want something that's going to vine up it. You want something that's going to be there to help the tires, the tractors, when you're driving through, will be a base for your tractors to drive on, so you don't ever have to not be able to get into your field because it's too wet. You had a summer downpour, and now you can't get out and work your field when you actually absolutely need to get out there. If you can maintain that very low-growing set of plant species, you really do you save yourself a lot of money, including reducing water.
And then when you go to sow, Elaine, you just cut through the vegetation to allow the cedar to go through for the new planting for the new season. Is that correct?
That's right. So you're only going to be disturbing just that strip where you're putting in your crop plant. You're not disturbing anything outside that crop row. There's some pretty interesting work by the USDA High Plains Research Station here in the U.S. where Jay Fuhrer has been working with a number of different crop broadacre growers to put in these understory plant species, and showing that by maintaining the biology in the soil, always having a plant growing in the system, never bare soil, except for that very short period of time where you strip till and you slice through your cover crop. But because the cover crop is real low growing, you don't have to mow it, you don't have to use a pesticide or herbicide to burn it down. There's no additional work beyond that one time that you go and spread this mix of seeds. And what Jay was showing was in the first year when they put out a mix of 15 to 25 different plant species that they, you know, picked them because it would be have all these appropriate conditions, low growing, very water tolerant, working in North and South Dakota, up in Manitoba, throughout the Great Plains of the United States, very dry, arid parts of the world. What they were showing was, in the first year, it was maybe 3 to 4 plant species grew in the first year. The next year, it was a different set of plant species that grew. The next year, it was a different set. It was never the same mix of plant species that came up, but I believe they've had all 15 of the species they put out, or the 25 species they put out, have come up sometime in the last 10 to 15 years. Because we don't know what the weather is going to be. So how can we guess which is the species of plant that you should be putting out this year? Put them all out.
If I'm, excuse me, if